We return to the library with about a half hour to spare. The librarian catches us walking back in, but doesn't say a word. So, Rhiannon asks me, what should I read next? I show her feed. I tell her all about The Book Thief. I drag her to find Destroy All Cars and First Day on Earth. I explain to her that these have been my companions all these years, the constants from day to day, the stories I can always return to, even if mine is always changing. What about you? I ask her. What do you think I should read next? She takes my hand and leads me to the children's section. She looks around for a second, then heads over to a display at the front. I see a certain green book sitting there and panic. No, not that one, I say. But she isn't reaching for the green book. She's reaching for Harold and the Purple Crayon. What could you possibly have against Harold and the Purple Crayon? She asks. I'm sorry. I thought you were heading for the Giving Tree. Rhiannon looks at me like I'm an insane duck. I absolutely hate the Giving Tree. I am so relieved. Thank goodness. That would have been the end of us, had that been your favorite book. Here, take my arms, take my legs, take my head, take my shoulders, because that's what love's about. That kid is like the jerk of the century, I say, relieved that Rhiannon will know what I mean. The biggest jerk in the history of all literature, Rhiannon ventures. Then she puts down Harold and moves closer to me. Love means never having to lose your limbs, I tell her, moving in for a kiss. Exactly, she murmurs, her lips soon on mine. It's an innocent kiss. We're not about to start making out in the beanbag chairs offered by the children's room. But that doesn't stop the ice water effect when George's mother calls out his name, shocked and angry. What do you think you're doing? She demands. I assume she's talking to me, but when she gets to us, she pummels right into Rhiannon. I don't know who your parents are, but I did not raise my son to hang out with whores. Mom, I shout, leave her alone. Get in the car, George, right this minute. I know I'm only making it worse for George, but I don't care. I'm not leaving Rhiannon alone with her. Just calm down, I tell George's mother, my voice squeaking a little as I do. Then I turn to Rhiannon and tell her I will talk to her later. You most certainly will not, George's mother proclaims. I take some satisfaction in the fact that I'm only under her supervision for another 8 hours or so. Rhiannon gives me a kiss goodbye and whispers that she's going to figure out a way to run away for the weekend. George's mother actually grabs him by the ear and pulls him outside. I laugh, and that only makes things worse. It's like Cinderella in reverse. I've danced with the prince, and now I'm back home cleaning the toilets. That is my punishment. Every toilet, every tub, every garbage pail. This would be bad enough, but every few minutes, George's mother stops in to give me a lecture about the sins of the flesh. I hope that George doesn't internalize her scare tactics. I want to argue with her. Tell her that sins of the flesh is just a control mechanism. If you demonize a person's pleasure, then you can control his or her life. I can't say how many times this tool has been wielded against me in a variety of forms. But I see no sin in a kiss. I only see sin in the condemnation. I don't say any of this to George's mother. If she were my full-time mother, I would. If I were the one who would shoulder the aftermath, I would. But I can't do that to George. I've messed up his life already. Hopefully for the better, but maybe for the worse. Emailing Rhiannon is out of the question. And we'll just have to wait until tomorrow. After all the toil is done, after George's father has weighed in with a speech of his own, seemingly dictated by his wife, I had to bed early, take advantage of having the silence of a room all to myself. If my time as Rhiannon is any proof, I can construct the memories that I will leave George with. So as I lie there in his bed, I conjure an alternate truth. He will remember heading to the library, and he will remember meeting a girl. She will be a stranger to town, dropped off at the library while her mother visited an old colleague. She asked him what he was reading, and a conversation began. They went for Chinese food together and had a good time. He was really into her. She was really into him. They went back to the library, had the same conversation about the Giving Tree, and moved in to kiss. That's when his mother arrived. That's what his mother disrupted. Something unexpected, but also something wonderful. The girl disappeared. They never told each other their names. He has no idea where she lives. It was all there for a moment, and then the moment unraveled. I am leaving him with longing, which may be a cruel thing to do, but I'm hoping he will use his longing to get out of this small, small house.